We're talking superannuation and what the changes announced in this budget could mean for your choices in the future. Plus, a timely reminder that come June 30th this year, some of the super changes from last year's budget come into force. So we'll talk about those changes as well. My guest is Susan Thorpe. Susan is a Professor of Finance and Superannuation from the University of Sydney. Professor Susan Thorpe, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Michael. Great to be here.
Let's get stuck straight in, Susan. First, the government is removing in this proposed budget the $450 per month minimum income threshold for employers to pay super. A lot of interest groups have been calling for this removal for a long time. What are the implications for our lowest paid workers, given that roughly two-thirds of them are women?
That's right. So, as you say, in the past, employers have not been required to pay superannuation guarantee contributions. That's the standard 9.5% of earnings for these workers who are earning less than $450 a month. And that is being legislated for change through the current budget. As you say, this estimates are that this will affect about 300,000 low-paid workers, and the majority of them are women. And that the expectation is that over time, this will contribute to the engagement of this group with the super system, and also enable better accumulations for these people who are on the edges of the workforce.
That is significant, isn't it? 300,000 more individuals in this country on low incomes engaging with the superannuation system. You'd have to say that is a marked moment.
That's a considerable increase in coverage, certainly. We probably have about 14 million people currently covered by superannuation, so 300,000 extra is a non-trivial number. The important thing, of course, to realise is that The efficiency of including these people into the super system also depends on a couple of other reforms that are in train at the moment, the most important of which is the changes that mean that people's default super account will follow them. So if very low income earners such as this group were introduced to the super system and all they did was accumulate lots of different super accounts through working for many different employers in the casual setting, they would also be at the same time incurring lots of sets of fees. So the legislative changes around default settings are really important. The other thing to note is that it's an ongoing problem in the super system that some employers do not actually make the contributions that they're legally required to make. So alongside this introduction of the requirement for these employers to pay superannuation guarantee contributions, it's also important that employees and their advocates monitor the actual contributions that are made by employers in these settings to ensure that those superannuation contributions actually go in and benefit people.
Sorry, just on that matter, Susan, are you saying it's up to employees to monitor that their bosses are doing the right thing?
Well, ultimately, the responsibility is on the employers, but most of us have to check. And it's a good idea to check and make sure those payments are actually being made. The tax office provides penalties for employers that don't make these contributions, but it's still the case that unpaid contributions are a problem in the system.
All right. Well, look, on top of this change we've started talking about, along with some of the points you've just raised there, we've also got this this idea too that not only the threshold is changing, but also that the superannuation guarantee has now been guaranteed by the federal government, which means employers will eventually pay 12% in contributions, which sounds like great news. If you are a low-income worker, and perhaps you're a woman, as you say, two-thirds of the workforce on low income are women, and you stay on that kind of low income for, say, your working life of, let's talk hypothetically, of, say, 40 years, and you've got that 12% guarantee coming into force, you've now got super contributions being paid by your employer because that $450 per month has been removed, are you going to have a shot at having a workable retirement income at the end of your working life?
The component of the retirement income system that really protects people in this situation is the age pension. Right. That will continue to be the mainstay for people on very low incomes. And it's always been the intention of the system that the age pension provides the ultimate safety net. So for people, if we take the example of someone who is actually earning $450 a month and continues to do that through their working life, even at 12%, we're probably looking at total of accumulations around the $8,000 to $10,000 mark after a working life, assuming that people are actually only earning $450 a month. The reality is that most people start around there or experience part-time and casual work for a period of their working life, and then their work patterns change. Particularly women in midlife tend to engage more in the labour force and have the ability to contribute more to super. But yeah, in and of itself, 12% of $450 a month doesn't amount to a lot of wealth at retirement. We still rely on the support of the age pension to look after people in that situation.
And Susan, I guess one of the other areas of concern raised after Tuesday night's budget was there was no change to the government following through on super being earned during paid parental leave. That hasn't come into force. Is that a concern from your perspective?
It's probably a concern in the sense, in principle concern, in the sense that that we do want to see parental leave supported through the superannuation system. But work done by the Retirement Income Review suggests that the actual effect of superannuation contributions during paid parental leave is very small. Their calculations put this at less than 1% of a retirement balance for most ordinary workers. So while it's a desirable goal, the actual impact of super contributions during paid parental leave in terms of accumulations is relatively minor. The biggest obstacle to people accumulating more superannuation, particularly women and those who are involved in caring, that keeps them away from paid work a lot is simply the fact that the superannuation system depends on an income. The more you work and contribute labour, the more income you earn, the more super you accumulate up to some maximum boundaries. So the big effects are about workplace participation. I think if we want to see help for families, help for families through the superannuation system, we have to. Consider the fact that the superannuation system is structured around individuals. You know, it works as an income tax structure effectively. And a lot of our social security and support for families and our age pension system, our social security systems work around household structures. So one of the approaches that we can take for making this work better is to allow more flexibility for intra-household sharing within the superannuation system. So if we have partners with very uneven accumulations of superannuation, one approach to making the whole thing work better is to allow more sharing within households.
And just on that very point, of course, there's also, I think, a push in this budget for better transparency of what super accumulation is happening for partners in the event that they may want to separate or divorce, because that has been an area of sort of obscurity sometimes when it comes to financial settlement.
Yes, and divorce can be such a major setback for people in terms of their financial well-being. So moves that increase that transparency and allow for fairer and clearer settlement are highly desirable.
My guest today is Susan Thorpe. She's a professor of finance and superannuation at the University of Sydney. And the reason why we've asked Susan on is she's obviously fantastic at explaining a very complex area of our financial lives in a way that we can all understand. Now, we do have a question here. It's a little obscure, Susan, so let me sort of gently go through this and see what we have. This texter says, regarding superannuation and the fees, I have a very small amount of super, says the texter. I'd like to double it to $3,000, which, again, to me sounds pretty small. How should I do this, this person has asked? Should I have a mix of personal input and different investments, or, you know, what should work best for me to build my super, given that they take out fees as well for administration? This person's on a pension as well, by the way, Susan. How's that for a complex question?
these are examples. There's nothing simple about superannuation, and every time I dive into it, I'm gobsmacked by the level of complexity that operates inside the system. It's a really good idea to talk to your superannuation fund about questions like this. Most funds have call centers that are well equipped with people who can give advice that suits a particular person.
Can I just ask, before you go on, if you're with a retail fund, can you necessarily ensure that the advice you get from inside the fund isn't going to be geared towards their profit outcomes? How do you know that?
The rules around advice are designed to protect people from advice that operates greatly in the self-interest of the advisor.
Okay.
And most funds give sensible advice most of the time. I guess we can never be sure that any expert is giving us advice that's entirely disinterested in most instances. But in general, the sorts of advice that you get from a superannuation fund, which is general advice in most instances, is usually reliable and helpful to people. And it's a good port of call to go to start with. In relation to building your super, other than the superannuation guarantee contributions, which might be limited for a person who's receiving a pension, there are several options available for making additional contributions. And one way that the government supports this is for people with low incomes is through what's called the co-contribution, the government co-contribution. So people on low incomes can benefit, first of all, by getting an additional tax offset. And secondly, if they make extra contributions under certain circumstances, and again, this is a situation where there are lots of regulations around the operation of this system, the government will also provide extra contributions up to $500. So that can be a good way to build up a small balance quite quickly, and that's available to people on a year-by-year basis. So that's one thing to look at as well. But, go to your fund and talk to them about a good way to do that.
Susan, let's move on to some of the other changes mooted in Tuesday night's budget. Let's talk about retirees. Now, there's changes afoot in the work test rules. What were they and how have they been changed?
So previously, people around early retirement age were required to work 40 hours over a 30-day period in order to make concessional or non-concessional, contributions to their superannuation fund, either tax-preferred or not tax-preferred. That work requirement has been removed. So people now in that age group are able to make contributions into their superannuation accounts without meeting this work test. I think that the government is trying to offer more flexibility to people to sort out their financial affairs around retirement and get their wealth in order so that they can maximise their well-being at that particular age.
Yeah. Okay, good. I just wanted to know. Now, look, one of the other facets of the budget, which I didn't actually know was in place already, but they've changed the age limit or the sort of age threshold for this, is that you can actually downsize yourself. And as a result of maybe passing, that sounds weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, downsize your home, hopefully.
Yeah, downsize your home, exactly. And so freeing up that premises for maybe younger property owners coming into the market, and you then get a sort of a boon by being able to put up to $300,000 into your super with the kind of tax benefits that goes with that. What's changed in that regard now as of Tuesday night if these proposals get through Parliament?
So the downsizing rules, the The downsizing rules have been made more flexible through this particular budget. Basically, the main change is that this used to be restricted to people over 65 years of age, and it's now available to people at 60 years of age. There are other sorts of eligibility criteria, but basically, people from age of 60 can now downsize their home and contribute an extra $300,000 per person from the proceeds of their home, and that doesn't count towards other sorts of contributions caps. So normally there's a limit to how much extra you can contribute to your super fund, and for after-tax contributions, non-concessional contributions, that's $100,000, actually rising to $110,000. But this $300,000 per person can be contributed without impacting that cap.
So if you're a couple, Susan, that's $600,000. Yeah. That's significant.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very large. And I agree with you, Michael, not many people know about this. It's not very widely used as an option. Most Australian households tend to hold on to the family home through retirement. But this is a terrific way to access capital in your house and provide yourself with liquidity, with liquid funds that you can use for spending during retirement.
Okay, well, let's now turn to younger people because time's afoot and I need to get through some of the other aspects of this population that we hold dear in this country. The Super Saver Scheme, this is a chance, I think, for Australians trying to enter the housing market to access super early. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Again, this is a scheme that has been in place for a while but hasn't had a huge amount of take-up. So the main change in this budget is that the amount of savings that you can withdraw from the First Home Super Saver Scheme, this is hard to say, has increased from $30,000 to $50,000. Now, the idea here is to make extra contributions. These are not the standard 9.5% employer contributions, but you have to make extra contributions into your superannuation fund of up to $15,000. Dollars per year, that amount earns accumulates earnings at a rate that's fixed by the tax office, but is about 3% at the moment. And then at the time you wish to pay a deposit on a house, you can withdraw that amount, and now up to $50,000. The benefits of this scheme are really in terms of tax minimization. So again, without wanting to go into too much detail about the way the scheme works, there are certain tax advantages to saving this way, and there's a reliable rate of return that's above what you'd get from a bank. I actually think one of the interesting benefits of the First Home Super Saver Scheme is that it creates a bucket. So if you want to save for a deposit, you're putting money into a bucket that's hard to get out, it's hard to withdraw from until such a time as you want to pay the deposit. So there are tax advantages, there are, can be financial advantages for certain people through this scheme, but it's what we economists call a pre-commitment device. Once the savings are in there, they're pretty hard to get out, and that tends to preserve them if you're trying to save up for a deposit. So for people who have a bit of trouble keeping savings set aside, this could be a structure that could help.
Once again, just a warning here, this is general advice and financial discussion around the possibilities of change in this budget and what goes forward. Everyone's individual circumstances are different. Go and seek specific financial advice for your circumstances. We're just sort of talking about batting around some of the concepts here with Susan Thorpe. Quickly before we go, Susan, let's talk about the changes that are coming into place, or play rather, come July 1st this year from the super changes of last budget. What do we need to be looking out for?
Yeah, so there were some really important changes introduced, and some of these have been, some of these are in train and will happen, and others of them are still yet to be legislated but likely to go ahead. So the first and most important in my view is legislation around single default accounts. So this has been a fundamental problem with the Australian superannuation system, and the fact that there's legislation afoot so that in future people will hold one default account and carry that through their working life with the option of changing, of course, should they wish to. that's a major and significant change that should go ahead shortly. In addition to that, the MICE, Your Super, Your Future legislation also introduced the a series of performance tests that superannuation funds will be required to be reviewed under. There will be an annual performance test, and funds that underperform will be required to notify their members that they are underperforming, and then members will be directed to a comparison tool that's being developed and that will be available, I think, through the Australian Tax Office that could enable people to compare how their fund's doing with other funds.
And Susan, I take it that tool and that self-reporting of non-competency, if you like, is going to be applicable to both retail and industry funds?
Yes, this is applicable to any fund that wishes to accept new members. So if a fund fails this underperformance test for 2 years in a row, the proposal is that they will not be allowed to accept new members. So this is a significant and major change in funds reporting to their members. This will probably go ahead. There are also higher standards being applied to funds, basically requiring them to explain their activities and how the activities produce benefits for members as well. They're probably
Susan,
the main ones.
The main ones? Great. Well, I think I know we've kind of scratched the surface across a whole range of changes being mooted, but hopefully that gives people a sense of direction. It's been fantastic to have you on. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Michael. Pleasure.
Susan Thorpe, Professor of Finance and Superannuation at the University of Sydney, with some of those changes mooted not only in the budget of Tuesday night for superannuation, but also from last year as well.